ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, here we go. Welcome in. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line, a brand new week worth of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. I've got you till 8 o'clock tonight. We've got a lot coming up on the show in about 10 minutes or so. We are going to be joined by NHL Network and FanDuel Sports Network analyst Mike Kelly. He does a lot of data work with his analysis, and he jumps in from one broadcast to another across the FanDuel Sports Network through all their RSNs across the country. He's actually going to be part of the Blues broadcast coming up tomorrow night. So Mike Kelly's going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Blues. Next hour, we'll talk with Mark Saxon, associate sports editor with the Columbia, Missourian. And also, he's a guy who covered baseball in St. Louis for a while. So we'll talk Mizzou, and we'll also talk a little bit baseball with him. And also next hour, maybe under the category of biggest sports story from the weekend that is not getting huge coverage, it was quite the night for Lindenwood Hockey on Friday night when they went out and they knocked off the number 5 team in the nation, DU Denver. So that we'll talk with Coach Keith Fisher about what his program was able to do on Friday night. Really a special moment for them. And they've done this now 2 years in a row. Last year, if you remember, they beat Wisconsin early on in the season, and Wisconsin was a top 10 team. This year, they beat Denver, a top 5 team, a team that is always in national championship contention. So I'm a big college hockey guy. It hasn't like infiltrated the St. Louis sports market the way it does other markets. There's some places where college hockey is a really, really big deal. And to be fair, I lived in one of those places. I lived in Colorado Springs for a while, and you had both Colorado College and Air Force that had big college hockey programs, and that's where I kind of fell in love with the sport. We're on a bit of an island because Mizzou doesn't have college hockey. The University of Illinois doesn't have college hockey. You got to travel pretty far to find the nearest college hockey program, other than like the nearest major conference college hockey program to St. Louis, unless I'm not really thinking it might be Wisconsin. That would have to be the closest one. Minnesota is in there when you go eat. I mean, Michigan, a lot of those Big Ten pro, but you have to travel. You have to travel a far distance. So would love to see Lindenwood help people in the St. Louis area fall in love with a really, really good sport. So, Keith Fisher is going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll talk a little bit of Lindenwood hockey with him for sure. Fun sports weekend, interesting sports weekend. That Mizzou game, we talked about it a lot during Rush Hour Sports. I give Mizzou the credit for winning. And like I said last hour, if you were with me, with us, playing on the road in the SEC, almost no matter who you play, it's tough. And we saw that this weekend. You've got a team in Texas A&M, legitimate national title contender, going and playing an Arkansas team that hasn't won a game in the SEC. It's a three-point game. Alabama just absolutely rolled over Tennessee. I thought Tennessee had a shot in that. I actually thought Tennessee was going to win that game because I've seen what Tennessee has done offensively this year, and I thought they were going to overwhelm Alabama. Got that one wrong. I've been wrong on a lot of college football stuff this year. Don't listen to me when it comes to college football. See, I can admit when I don't know what I'm where I'm going with stuff. But yeah, I really thought Tennessee offensively would do a lot more than they did this weekend. Vanderbilt beat LSU. I think LSU was a little bit of a fraud anyways, and I like the Vanderbilt quarterback, Pavia, so that, I guess that one's not that big of a shocker. The fact that Texas barely beat Kentucky. I mean, everything you know is the fact that Florida got a win against Mississippi State in Gainesville and still cost Florida their head coach's job. Billy Napier got fired. So the home road thing is a thing. So judging Missouri too much on not overwhelming Auburn probably is not fair. At the same time, if you're Missouri, if you're trying to prove that you are an upper echelon, upper quarter team in the SEC, a team that has a legit opportunity to maybe sneak into the college football playoff, well, then you'd like to see it. You'd rather not see them playing a double overtime game against Auburn. But a win is a win is a win, and nobody is going to worry. The only time the double overtime win against Auburn will get brought up is if they start losing some games. And if they start losing some games, and then we get to the end of the season and we're doing the whole resume thing, and we say, well, they lost to Oklahoma, and they lost to Texas A&M, and they barely beat Auburn. That's the only time. And they had to go to double overtime to beat Auburn. That's the only time that this could come back to bite them a little bit, is if it's going to be used as a way to increase the negativity on their resume. If they go win a bunch of these games that are left in the season, they've got three really big games left in the year. They've got a game at home against Texas A&M, the number three team in the nation. They've got a game on the road against Vanderbilt, who's now number 10. And they have the game at Oklahoma, who's now number 13. By the way, I'm still not buying Oklahoma. I'm not. Now, part of why they didn't look good against Texas was their quarterback. They brought John Mateer back in that game, and they brought him back a week early. He should have never played. The kid that they had playing while he was injured was doing a perfectly fine job. That's just a bad decision that was made there in Norman to bring him back. But I'm still not a big believer in Oklahoma. They look good this weekend. They had the most impressive, or I guess the most one-sided road victory would be the best way to say it, because they went to South Carolina and just run them off the field, won that game 26-7. So we'll talk. We'll talk a little bit of Missouri football later on in the program. The Blues, that was a nice win for them. Here's where I'm stuck when it comes to the Blues. It is hard for me to like talk about them in. They looked really good against Dallas, and I'd love for that to be who they are, but I'm not convinced that it is. I know they're not the team that lost 5-0 to the Wild and lost 8-3 to the Blackhawks. I know they're not the team that's given up a million goals. It's so early on in the season. My job is to like have strong opinions about the Blues, and it's very challenging right now to have strong opinions. I could be disingenuous with you. I could be some hot take artist that turns on my microphone and starts yelling and screaming about things going on with the Blues. That's not what I believe. I think they're a really good team that's just early on in the season, and this is what happens early on in the season, but it is a challenge for me because part of my job here. It is good if people enjoy listening to this show. It's good if I'm not boring. And it's kind of boring to sit here and say, yeah, they're pretty good. They've been all right. The losses weren't great, but that's just early. Like, that's kind of boring, right? That's not a big statement. And so that's where I'm at with the Blues right now. I am challenged to talk about them in a compelling way that is also something that I believe. If you want me to yell and scream about the fact that they lost to the Blackhawks 8-3 just so people can like listen to some guy who's upset about something, I can do that, but I don't like being disingenuous. I don't like saying things that I don't actually believe. I think they're fine. They're fun. That was a good win against the Stars. I liked that Jim Montgomery, we talked about this on, was it Friday when Jim Montgomery made the blender noise sound effect when he was talking? I think it was, which was hilarious. And, you know, blending up the lines, and it worked. I can say this for like the first, I am a prisoner of the moment, but for one of the first times ever, I'm like, well, okay, Jordan Kyrou, show me who you are from a defensive standpoint. Go play on that third line, go score a goal, but also go back check. Like that was good to see. And here's where that's impactful. Here's where that's really impactful. If a Jordan Kyrou, a guy who, with all due respect to Kyrou, is not exactly known as the gritty, go into the corner, do all the small things kind of guy, and that sounds like I'm putting him down, and I'm not attempting to put him down in this moment, but that's not his reputation, right? He's a goal scorer. He's a really, really talented goal scorer. If he's going to go out and do the things that he did in that game against the Stars, well, that's going to lift everybody up. That's going to set a tone. That is really, really impactful, and we'll see if it continues on moving forward. We'll talk a little baseball. We talked earlier in the rush hour about the Shohei Ohtani game. That was crazy. That was crazy. Tonight we are going to get the other participant in the World Series. I don't know. Who are St. Louis sports fans rooting for in this one? There's text in. I'd be interested in this one. Drop in text messages, and I'm just going to kind of do a straw poll as we go along. Who are you rooting for tonight, Toronto or Seattle? 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you text in. Who are you rooting for, Seattle or Toronto? I'm all in on the Seattle team. I think they're fun. I don't know who's going to have an opportunity against the Dodgers, but I really think the Seattle team is fun. So, and here's, my daughter goes to a school where her principal is a big Seattle fan, and I told her, hey, every day you see the principal, go up and say, go Mariners. And she's all in on it, and I think it's given her some, you know, favorite status at the elementary school. So there it is. Yeah, we're really starting to get some text in so far. We're seeing a lot of Seattles come in. So it seems like St. Louis is pulling for Seattle tonight based off the messages that I'm seeing right now. Again, 314-436-7900. You can just text. A lot of people are doing it. Just text in Seattle or Toronto, and we'll see what this looks like as we move along. We will take a break, and when we return, we are going to be joined by a hockey analyst, Mike Kelly. We'll get his thoughts on the Blues here through the first handful of games. That's up next. You are locked to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Very happy to welcome on to the program right now. He is a hockey analyst with NHL Network, also doing some work with FanDuel Sports Network. He is Mike Kelly. You follow him on Twitter at Mike Kelly NHL. Mike, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Hey, my pleasure. I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing all right. So it's been an interesting start here in St. Louis for the Blues. Obviously, some pretty high expectations for them going in. Some one-sided losses, but also some nice wins on the road. And then they finally got a win against Dallas at home the other day. It's only five games in. I know you can't take too much away. But what's been your general takeaway on what we've seen so far from the Blues?
Yeah, I think, as you kind of touched on, a little inconsistent. The win over Dallas is a big one. I mean, Dallas is as good as just about anybody in the league. And, I went back and was looking at that game. St. Louis did a really good job of just kind of being tight defensively. You know, Jim Montgomery had some comments after the game about some of the defensive play that he said has been the best he's seen in a while. And so I think for St. Louis, that's been a positive this season. I know their goals against is the bottom 10 in the league, but defensively they've actually played really well. They will get better goaltending. That's kind of it right now, is that the goaltending, there's been a couple off nights, but when that corrects itself, I think this is going to end up being a really solid defensive team. And that'll kind of I think that's the blueprint they're looking for to just build off the rest of their game from.
Yeah, Jordan Kyrou's never really been known as a guy who's been a great defensive player, but he had a really solid defensive game against Dallas. He has moved down to the third line. They're continuing to kind of move lines around and figure things out. And if you're getting a really good defensive performance from Jordan Kyrou, that probably means you've got a lot of forwards who are doing things well defensively.
Absolutely. When you're offensive players, especially like top offensive players, can be guys making big defensive plays, that sends a signal to the rest of the team, right? That, hey, if these guys are doing it, there's no excuses for anybody not to be doing it. And you're absolutely right. He made a couple of really nice plays. Like the goal that he scored came off of an entry that he had, but that entry that he had started by him breaking up a play in the neutral zone. So that's something when I talk to young players, whether it's early NHL or younger, that I talk about all the time, is like no forward, especially a skill forward, wants to defend in their own end. Like that, it's hard work and it's not fun. But if you can defend in the offensive zone, if you can defend in the neutral zone and turn that into transition offense, we're having fun again. So I thought that was a great example on his goal of doing exactly that. And he got rewarded for it.
We're talking with Mike Kelly, NHL Network, and also FanDuel Sports Network. Somebody that we're continuing to keep a close eye on here is Jimmy Snuggerud, who's got a little bit of time at the end of last season, but this is his first real full experience in the NHL. We've already seen him jump from the first line to the third line to the next second line. It seems like he's going out there and he's fitting in, he's getting better. What have you seen from a young guy like Snuggerud, who really seems like he's fitting in quite well very early on in his career?
I agree with you, and it's good if you can try to do it in a few different spots. And he's a goal scorer. Like he's got a really good shot. I think everybody knows that. But his instincts in the offensive zone are impressive as well, especially for a kid that age. You look this season, if you're looking at forwards per game, I was looking at this earlier today in advance of the game tomorrow that I'll be on FanDuel for in St. Louis. Slot shots on net. If you get shots from here at a high volume and you've got any sort of scoring touch at all, you're going to score a decent chunk of goals. And he ranks 24th among forwards in producing shots from that home plate slot area. He gets chances. He gets in around the net. If you go even tighter to the net, the inner slot right around the net is 29th per game, 37th in rebound chances. So you're top 40 in the league. And the season's young, obviously, but you either go there or you don't. Right. And he does go there and he's got the shot to match. So if he can continue to produce that kind of volume from these key scoring areas with the ability he has to put the puck in the net, that'll be a big, big win for the St. Louis Blues.
One player who's not on the ice right now is defenseman Logan Mailloux. They've taken him off just as he's a young guy, and they went out and got him in the offseason. There's still a lot of excitement about what he's going to turn into. But how challenging is it when you do have a young player who's trying to adjust to the NHL and it's not working, and you actually have to do what the Blues have done here and made him a healthy scratch as he tries to find his way back in? Montgomery has said once he's back in, he's in for good, but we just don't know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's the hard. I mean, if we're not talking about goalies, just in terms of the other positions you can play in the sport, it's the hardest one to get accustomed to, I guess, at the NHL level as a young player. You see it all the time. So it's not shocking. Like, I think Matthew Schaefer, what he's doing for the New York Islanders this year, if anyone's comparing themselves to him, and they should not be, it's setting an unrealistic expectation for everyone else. I mean, that kid just turned 18 years old. He looks like he's been in the league for 500 games. Playing defense isn't that easy for everybody else, and it takes an adjustment period for most players. So it's not shocking. I think probably the most important thing you could do for him right now is just get him games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if it's not going to be at the NHL level, just get him games, get him playing, and just continue the development path. It's not linear for everybody, and for defensemen, oftentimes it can take a little while. And if I'm a Blues fan, I really wouldn't be too concerned with where things are at now. He's a highly touted prospect for a reason. You don't want to rush a kid, especially when you're in a situation where you don't have to.
We're talking with Mike Kelly from NHL Network. You mentioned he's going to be part of the FanDuel Sports Network broadcast for the Blues tomorrow. I was looking forward to talking to you because you do so much from an advanced statistics standpoint, and you've referenced some of those in this conversation. I'm a baseball guy, and so there's so much advanced data in the game of baseball that is widely accepted. I feel like hockey is kind of right behind baseball. It started with Fenwick and Corsi, and now it's really gone beyond that. But as somebody like you who's really leading the way in that area, have hockey coaches, hockey front offices, do you feel like they've been quick to adopt that, or is it something that's still sometimes a bit of a challenge?
Well, look, in my experience of being in this space for 10 years now, I'm working for a company that works with a number of NHL teams, almost all of them. I would say that the adoption part is almost kind of completely done. Like every team uses it to some degree. Some use it more than others. Some use it better than others. That's true of anything in any walk of life, right? But it'd be rare at this point to find people in an organization that don't adopt it to some degree. Like I said, some buy into it more than others. Some use it more than others. Some use it more effectively than others. But definitely in the 10 years that I've been in this space full time, it's come a long, long way. And the great thing about hockey, and the reason I love it, like you talk about baseball, I feel like baseball at this point, because of the way the sport is played, it starts and stops with the same event every single time, a pitcher throwing a ball. It was kind of made for advanced statistics in that sense. What excites me about hockey is that it's chaotic. It's still in its infancy of trying to figure it out with the technology that's available. So there's so much room for exploration and just trying things. And that's the part I love the most. And I know from talking to players and coaching staffs and managers, there's still a lot of that going on. That's to me what makes it exciting.
I don't know if you can answer this question or not, just with your role and everything, but are the Blues a team that you feel like do a nice job in terms of using advanced data?
I know some people in the organization, and I know some people in the analytics side of the organization. They've been long-time adopters. They would have a head start, I would say, on your average team, and just in terms of how long they've been looking at it and using it. And I know, you know, head coach is somebody who is aware of it and has taken time to understand it as well. I would say just in a general sense, the Blues are in a good spot when it comes to using and applying analytics.
He is Mike Kelly, hockey analyst, NHL Network, FanDuel Sports Network. You see him sometimes taking part in the Blues broadcast. He's all over FanDuel for all the various teams that are on the FanDuel regional networks across the country. At Mike Kelly, NHL on Twitter. Mike, thank you so much for taking this time and being so gracious with your time. We really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Good chatting with you, and hope to do it again soon.
That is Mike Kelly joining us on the program, and we appreciate him taking a few moments with us as we got the chance to talk with him. And yeah, he'll be on again. He's part of the broadcast coming up tomorrow on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. The Blues get back at it tomorrow evening as they are going to match up against the Kings. That's going to be a 7 o'clock puck drop over at the Enterprise Center tomorrow evening. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got a lot more coming up. We'll have a couple guests in the 7 o'clock hour just after the 7 o'clock news. We're going to talk with Mark Saxon. We'll talk Mizzou sports with him, and also a little baseball. And next hour, the head coach of the Lindenwood men's hockey team that got just a fantastic win against a top five team in the nation, Denver. We'll talk with Coach Fisher coming up next hour as well. Don't go anywhere. You are locked in to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on a Monday night edition of the program. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk with Mark Saxon. Right off the bat, just after the 7 o'clock news, associate sports editor with the newspaper in Columbia, the Columbia Missourian. And then also next hour, we're going to talk with Keith Fisher. He is the head coach of the Lindenwood hockey team after they got a big win against number 5 GU over the weekend. So those are our interviews that are still coming up. I had thrown this out earlier. I was curious because I am rooting for the Seattle Mariners tonight. I'd like to see them win. And I threw out, hey, send in a text and let me know who you're rooting for tonight, Seattle or Toronto. Amazingly enough, there is not a single Toronto
text that I've got in. So I, from a very unofficial survey, we can say that St. Louis is definitely in Seattle's corner tonight. So we'll see if they can win a game seven on the road. I think Toronto probably wins game seven at home. More often than not, you're probably going to win that game. And then we'll have a World Series matchup. A lot of people are annoyed that the Dodgers are there. I understand it. In many ways, the Dodgers storyline has gotten a little bit hijacked here because, and I think, and this is not a criticism of Jeff Passan from ESPN, who I really, really like when it comes to all of the baseball insiders and the national baseball folks. Passan, if he's not my favorite, he's one of my favorites. He's really, really good at what he does. I like the way that he looks at baseball. But he had written something that kind of presented that Brewers-Dodgers series as the thing that is going to determine whether or not there's going to be a labor, whether there's going to be, labor stoppage, whether there's going to be labor issues going into 2027. And that's oversimplifying what he was saying, but in our world where everything's about headlines and bullet points, that's how a lot of people took it. So that sort of started this narrative. And then there's a report over the weekend that the Dodgers are going to make a run at Kyle Tucker. So then that just adds that much more to the whole idea that the Dodgers are on a different level, have a different playing field. And in some ways they do. Like, I'm not trying to, there are things the Dodgers do that you really appreciate because they do take more of their profits and their income and everything and put it back into the team. I agree with that. And Dave Roberts talked about that. But also, their incomes, their revenues are a lot more. Even if other baseball teams out there were able to made the decision to put a higher percentage of what they bring in back into the team, or if these billionaire owners made the decision that they were going to take a loss on an annual basis and put more on the team, they're still not at a point where they can put the money in that the Dodgers have. So the Dodgers have kind of turned into the evil empire here. It was the same way that a lot of people looked at the Yankees, certainly when they were going on, when they were on their run in the 90s. It is just exponentially more pronounced now that the Dodgers are doing things that other teams do not do. So it's being presented in a way that this is going to force a work stoppage a little bit more than a year from now. And look, there's a lot of kind of angling agendas that come to all of this. And I promise you, owners are already trying to plant things with some of the baseball insiders. Agents are trying to do some things. The Players Association, you're going to see a lot of stuff. If you're starting to see some things written, especially from a lot of people that are pushing you in the same direction, I would encourage you to think about what you are seeing and whether or not this is being pushed by somebody who's got a little bit of an agenda. I'm not saying that there's not going to be a work stoppage after this upcoming season. I'm very sure there is going to be a lockout during the offseason. Once the owners can lock out the players, they are going to. Honestly, I'd be surprised if spring training starts on time. But I would suspect that it ends up playing out the same way that the last one did, where spring training started a little bit late, but you were still able to get the full 162-game schedule in. Nobody wants to miss games. Players don't want to miss games. Owners don't want to miss games. Nobody wants to miss games. And until they get to a point where they are actually missing games, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think that's going to go in that direction. And I could be wrong. I certainly could. I don't know how dug in everybody is. Here's what causes you to miss games, though. If the owners walk into it a year from now and they say, we want a salary cap, and we are not moving off the idea of having a salary cap, well, then there's going to be missed games, because that's not something that the players agree to. But if the owners walk in and say there is a problem with some of these teams and the amount of money that they can spend, and it's creating a disparity in the competitive ability of teams to win at the highest level, Well, then you can start having a constructive conversation about the things that can happen. And I think there are things that can be done. I've talked a lot about this lately, so please forgive me if you've heard me say what I'm about to say. But I think if they came out of this next collective bargaining agreement and created an extreme tax on the big-time spenders, on the Dodgers and the Mets of the world, where, I mean, it takes what they're paying right now in the luxury tax and taking it just to another level where exponentially it is a huge number, where it would either force those teams to come back from that number, or it would distribute so much money across the rest of baseball that it would be impactful. Well, that would be the first thing you can do. I do believe there should be a salary floor. I would contend that it is a bigger issue in baseball. Some of the teams that are not spending enough money as opposed to some of the teams that are spending. And I would also, if there was a salary floor, I would take it one step further where every team has to spend the floor plus whatever money they receive from revenue sharing as a result of the tax money. So if the salary floor is $100 million, $120 million, let's say $100 million, and you receive $7 million because the Dodgers took their payroll to a certain point, well, then you should be required at $107. So it would force that money to be re-spent. I'd really like to see that. And that starts the process. An international draft is something. So there are things that can be done. And I don't think the Dodgers being in the World Series and the Dodgers potentially winning the World Series is going to mean, oh, there's not going to be baseball in 2027. Or, oh, they're going to miss the start of the season. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. But I do think it's really, really important for each side to understand what the other side is dug in on, what the other side is not willing to negotiate on, and then go from there. Because there's going to be a ton of things that are negotiable. Ton of things. So go find some common ground on those things, and then take your respective losses in the areas where the other side just will not come off of it. And if you do that, it probably results in a better CBA than is in right now. But if you're focused just on winning, if you're focused on getting things done that the other side will not budge on, that's where it could be a problem. And if you sit there and try to say, look at the Dodgers, look at the Dodgers, look at the Dodgers. They got to the World Series. Maybe they won the World Series. They went after Kyle Tucker after winning the World Series. If that happens, that hasn't happened yet. If you try to project the Dodgers as the evil empire, the reason why everything in baseball is not good, well, then I think that's a hard place to start from. And there's nothing wrong with focusing in on the fact that there are teams that are not big money teams that can have success. Whether, you know, the Cleveland Guardians are a great example in the run that they went on. Obviously, the Milwaukee Brewers. And I know people say, well, the Brewers got swept by the Dodgers. I would also contend, as someone who pays a fair amount of time, fair amount of attention to the Brewers, I know they always think out of the box. I know that they are they're a really smart team. I don't think they were smart against the Dodgers. Now, when the Dodgers threw out that starting pitching that they had, it's no matter how smart you are, it's hard to win, that's for sure. But the Brewers just got too cute. They just got too cute. They basically used one conventional starter during their playoff run, and that was Freddy Peralta. Eventually, Jose Quintana got a start. They kind of sidelined Quinn Priester after he did not have a good start, after he had a fantastic year. If I'm not saying the Brewers are in the World Series, I don't think they are. I think it was almost the team that won that Dodgers-Phillies series was the team that was going to represent the National League in the World Series. That's what I said then, and that's what I really believe. But I think the Brewers could have made it a little bit more interesting against the Dodgers if they would have done some things differently. And the Brewers absolutely deserved to beat the Cubs. This is not the Cubs were better than the Brewers statement. That's not what I'm saying. But because of how the Cubs are built, because of the Cubs' ability to hit home runs, even though I think the Dodgers win that series, even though I think the Dodgers are in the World Series, no matter if they play the Brewers or the Cubs in that spot, I do think the Cubs probably would have stolen a game or two just as a result of being able to hit home runs. You go hit home runs, you win games. You're gonna slug your way to a win or two in that series if you're the Cubs, something that the Brewers just did not seemingly have the ability to do. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. We still have to get into more college football. We'll do that a little bit with Mark Saxon after the 7 o'clock hour, talk through what happened with Mizzou. They got the win. Do you feel better? Do you feel worse about the Tigers after they get that win? We'll discuss that a bit on the other side of this break, and then we'll talk through it with Mark Saxon after the 7 o'clock news. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at as we start to wrap up hour number one of the program. So we're going to talk with Mark Saxon in just a few moments. He works with the Columbia, Missouri, and we'll talk Mizzou football with him. Mizzou got a win. That was the most important thing. They went on the road. It wasn't an overly impressive victory. It was against a not-so-great Auburn team. They had to go double overtime to get the win, but a win is a win is a win, and Missouri does get the win against Auburn 23-17. And what that win does is it continues to keep on the table everything that Missouri would like to accomplish this year. I have more questions about Missouri, though, right now than I did before this game, because I was pretty sure that Missouri was a really good running team. We talked about Ahmad Hardy so much and what he had done. This is Ahmad Hardy's line from Auburn. And admittedly, Auburn's got a very good run defense. That is one of their strengths. Ahmad Hardy against Auburn, 24 carries, so a legitimate number of carries. It's not like the week before where you come out of it going, man, they didn't even give it to Hardy. No, they gave it to him. 24 carries, 58 yards, did have two touchdowns, never had a carry more than 17 yards. Kevin Wheeler shared this with me earlier. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's it was a telling stat. So I'm not getting the numbers right, but I'll get the theory behind it right. Hardy, over the last 2 weeks, has more rushing yards after contact than he does having rushing yards. Again, I'll say that again. More rushing yards after contact than actual rushing yards. So what that means is Hardy is getting hit a lot before he even gets back to the line of scrimmage. And he, on his own, is doing much of this work. So this is not a shot at Ahmad Hardy. It is a little bit of a shot at Missouri as the ability on their overall team-wise ability to run the ball. But when you're out there playing Central Arkansas and Louisiana and UMass, it's a little bit different than when you're playing Auburn and Alabama. And as much as I like Ahmad Hardy, I do have some questions right now of just how good is the Missouri running game. Maybe there is a reason they went away from it against Alabama. We'll talk about that with Mark Saxon. He joins us after the 7 o'clock news. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it as we get into hour number two of the program. Very happy right now to be able to welcome onto the program. We'll talk a little Mizzou with him. We'll also probably get into a little baseball before we wrap things up. He is the associate sports editor with the Columbia Missourian. He is Mark Saxon, and yeah, you can follow him on Twitter at Mark A. Saxon, S-A-X-O-N. Mark, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's fun to be back on the airwaves with you, Matt. And yeah, it's been a very interesting start to the Mizzou season, and a lot of excitement for good reason. Who would have thought, right, that Vanderbilt Mizzou would be the center of the college football universe in mid to late October, right?
Yeah, I don't think many people had that on their bingo cards for sure. Do we have more answers or more questions about Missouri based off what happened against Auburn?
I think actually a lot of the questions that were there before that game were sort of underlined in ink, if that makes sense. I don't think any new issues arose, but, you know, for all of their running, their rushing yards that they had just piled up through those first, you know, five games, before they got to Alabama and Auburn, so the crux of the SEC schedule, you know, if you really dug in and looked at how they were getting those yards, a lot of them were just the greatness of Ahmad Hardy. Some of the offensive line grades on the blocking side were not great, so he was just breaking tackles and getting a lot of yards after contact. Well, what happened, I think, against Auburn is some of the issues on the offensive line proved to be a little bit more costly because guys were getting and hitting him in the backfield rather than when he got to the hole or a yard or two downfield. So I think they do have some issues they need to clean up on the offensive line side. And I do think there have been some too many big plays on the passing side for other teams. I think there's some miscommunication happening at times from the secondary. But again, beyond that, I would not say that there are enormous questions surrounding this program right now. They seem to me to be pretty solid all the way through the roster.
Yeah, it's really hard to win on the road at the SEC, and I think we saw that when you looked around some of the other games. Texas almost lost against Kentucky. You saw Texas A&M almost losing at Arkansas. If you want to take a shot at Missouri for maybe not playing their best game against Auburn, is it also important to remember at the same time that they're playing on the road for the first time this year?
Oh, it's absolutely enormous. And the coaches were extremely concerned about that because what happened last year, the first time they went on the road, they were undefeated. They went down to Texas A&M and they got clapped, right? They lost by, 30 points. And they kind of reeled for a little bit while after that. I mean, they were lucky enough, after that A&M game, they played UMass, one of the worst teams in FBS. So that helped. But, they had a lot of focus on that. They had so much focus, in fact, Matt, that the team took like a practice road trip before the season started to Lindenwood College, mm-hmm. of all places. They traveled to St. Louis, St. Charles area, just to practice sort of the protocols of a big time college football team practicing and the meetings you do at the hotels and all that stuff. That's how concerned they were coming off of what happened last year at Texas A&M. So yeah, it got that out of the way. They know they can win on the road in an extremely hostile environment. Their stadium is a tough place to play. And so, yes, I would say that was maybe the most important thing that happened from the zoo out of this game.
On social media, not that it matters, but on social media, Drink got a little bit of criticism for how he celebrated it. What did you think about his post-game celebration, jumping up and showing his enthusiasm?
Oh, you know what? This shows how little I'm on certain aspects of social media. I actually didn't see it. Can you describe it to me?
Oh, just people basically making fun of him for the fact that he jumped up on the podium and was excited, you know, almost looking like they won the Super Bowl when they beat Auburn, was basically the point that people were making.
So my impression of Drinkwitz is that's just his personality, yeah. Right? I mean, that he does that stuff all the time. He ends every interview, you know, on the field with M-I-Z, right? He's a little different kind of cat. So I think it's perfectly on brand myself. They were fired up again. Like that was, I wouldn't call it a trap game because it is Auburn. I mean, that's a little disrespectful, but Auburn has some very talented football players. They have a receiver who I think is going to be an NFL standout named Cam, Cam, it begins with a C anyway, very good receiver. They have a defensive line, as I mentioned, that just stuffed the run against Missouri. So that was a game that even though Auburn's been down, that was a game Mizzou easily could have lost. And so, yeah, I think there was a lot of relief in this coaching staff to get out of there with a win.
Yeah, Cam Coleman had a good game, 6 receptions, 108 yards. So he got after it after pretty good. It's this run of games, though, that Missouri is in right now, because playing Alabama last week, and I think we're really starting to see just how good Alabama is despite that early season loss. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to have back-to-back weeks with Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, and then even after one more week with Mississippi State, they then play Oklahoma. To go through a 6-week stretch where you have Alabama, Vanderbilt, A&M, and Oklahoma over 4 of those weeks, that's a really tough gauntlet to go through.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks to kind of when you're scheduling, if you have to be a little bit careful about front loading, you know, the easier games there, because they really, for the first 4 games, you know, Kansas, yeah, they had some struggles with Kansas, but for the most part, they were playing teams that they would have had to play so poorly to have any chance of losing. So to play Louisiana and UMass and Central Arkansas all within your first 5 games, it really does make it kind of difficult when you start ramping up. And so, as you mentioned, now they're in this gauntlet. Well, the way the SEC looks this year, if you look at the remaining, 6 games left on their schedule, any of those games could be a loss, and any of those games could be a win. You know, you look at that Texas A&M game and say, well, Texas A&M beat them last year badly and, you know, is in the top 5. But, you know, they have that game at home. But then you say, well, Arkansas, they fired their coach. That game's on the road. There's no easy games in the SEC. And I think that's the point they're at now. And I think the other question is, you know, if they are a bona fide college football playoff contender, how many losses can you afford? I think in past years they would have said that 3rd loss, you're out.
Yeah.
This year, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to see a multiple 3-loss teams, and Missouri could potentially be one of them. What if their only losses are to Alabama, Texas A&M, and at Oklahoma? That's not a bad resume.
No.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, that's where I get worried about the helmet decal bias that goes along with it, because if we're talking about Texas or Oklahoma, Ohio mm-hmm. State, like Michigan, if we're talking about one of those, then yeah, what you said is right on. If you're going to need help as Missouri with that 3rd loss to get in, call me jaded, but I don't know if the committee's going to do it for you.
No, you're right, and that's why, you know, the biggest game in the country this week is Mizzou Vanderbilt. You know, College Game Day is there. But maybe there is that little caveat. Maybe as big as this game is, because it's Vanderbilt and it's Mizzou, do they have to do more than, Tennessee or some of the teams you mentioned, LSU, Texas, as a 3-loss team to be considered? And you would hope it would be a little more formulaic than that. They would put more on, you know, strength of schedule and quality wins, things like that. And I do think they will. But I agree with you. At the end of the day, if you're a blue blood program, you probably do have to do a little bit less, you know, to get one of those multi-loss kind of positions in the playoffs.
We're talking with Mark Saxon, associate sports editor with the Columbia, Missouri. And since we have you, I wanted to ask you about this because you were somebody who was around the Cardinals for a while. When you see and hear the stories about Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina wanting to be managers, and it seems like Pujols, while he's not going to be with the Angels, it seems he's still talking to Baltimore. Now reports say that he might be the front runner for the San Diego job. Are these two guys that you think are going to go be successful as managers in the big leagues?
I mean, from what my experience is with both of those guys, I can't imagine there are too many people out there who are smarter baseball people than either one. And you don't see like the catcher thing to the dugout as a manager is a very common, probably the most common transition, because catchers have to see the whole game, right? They have to understand pitching and hitting. But Pujols, I think, is a perfect fit for coaching or managing because he always was just such an intelligent player. He was a guy who didn't have speed, but was a very above average base runner because he just knew when to go. He knew pitchers' moves. He knew the situation in the game. So yeah, to me, those guys both stand out. Even though typically you don't, you know, the old thing used to be, you know, Hall of Fame caliber players can't be good managers because they can't relate to the struggles of the average player. I think those two guys kind of could. And I think they have the personalities that would be outstanding. And I'd be shocked if they both really do want to do it. I'd be shocked if they're both not doing it very soon.
The game 7 of the ALCS is underway, Seattle and Toronto. Do you have a team that you think is going to win? And do you have a team that you want to win, whether they're the same or whether they're different?
It's tough because, you know, back in the day, I spent years covering the AL West. I went to Seattle 1,000 times, and I saw some great teams there that could just not play in the playoffs. I think specifically of that 2001 team. I was covering the A's that year. They won 116 games, and I think they got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, or possibly the second round. But, you know, they've just had that horrible playoff mojo. But part of me, too, like just seeing what Vladdy's doing, and I covered his dad, and it's just unbelievable what he is doing. So I don't know. To me, that's kind of the more charismatic side of the bracket right now because of those two storylines, Seattle never having been, and, you know, the Blue Jays representing a whole country and having that bad season last year. Basically the same guys, right? They didn't add a ton of guys, you know, going into this year. It's a lot of the same guys just playing much better. So I love that series. And, you know, it's almost like playing for the right, you know, taking the sheep to the slaughter, right? Because the Dodgers look so good right now. But still, anything can happen in that series, and it's just so much fun this time of year specifically.
Seattle just jumped out to a 1-0 lead. I've got the game on in the monitor here, so they've got the 1-0 lead. Yeah, so we'll see how things go. Mark, encourage people to follow along with you, associate sports editor with the Columbia, Missourian on Twitter at Mark A. Saxon. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll catch up again real soon.
Oh, I would love that. It was so nice visiting with you, Matt. Take care.
Awesome. Very good. That's Mark Saxon joining us here on the program. I don't know. Daniel Henkamp is here. I don't know. Did somebody just... I literally look down. I'm talking to Mark. The game was scoreless. I look up and it's 1-0. Did somebody hit a home run? What? I don't know. I can look it up. But yeah, that happened very, very quickly where it is now it's a 1-0 game for Seattle. But I said this earlier. Everybody, every single message we have gotten at this point. No, it was a Naylor single to score Rodriguez. So that's how the Mariners have the 1-0 lead. Every single message we have received is people really excited about the Mariners, or at least rooting for us. Yeah, we had one texter who's very unhappy with the fact that a league that is mostly based in the U.S. has a Canadian team. I was talking to about this? Oh, goodness. I can't remember. Somebody was really smart, and knew exactly what they were talking about. Because I've always kind of, I always appreciated Montreal as a baseball market and thought the Expos were fun. And as baseball goes to expand at some point in the next handful of years, I thought Montreal would be a team that or city that could get baseball again. And somebody told me, I can't remember who it was, but they had a ton of credibility that just from a financial standpoint and a market size standpoint, it's not going to work. Where a Toronto works, because there's, you know, when you think about the conversion rate and everything that goes along with being in Canada, when you've got a city the size of Toronto, it works out because of the money that is involved there and how big of a city that is. But for smaller cities in Canada, everything else from a financial standpoint, that it would just be a complete non-starter in terms of Montreal maybe getting Major League Baseball once again, that there are tons of cities in the United States that would be a better even financial fit than Montreal, which was kind of a bummer for me. I liked the idea of another Canadian team in Major League Baseball like it was before. But right now, as Mark alluded to, the Toronto Blue Jays are representing an entire country at this point against Seattle, who again, Seattle's got the 1-0 lead. All right, we are going to take a break, and when we return, we are set to, this could be fun. We're going to be joined by Keith Fisher. He is the head coach of the Lindenwood men's hockey program, and in case you haven't been following along, Lindenwood did something really, really special on Friday night. They picked up a win against number 5 Denver. That is something special. That's something that everybody involved in that game is going to remember, especially on a Lindenwood standpoint. And from also from their view of things, they are hopeful that that can turn into something more. Because like last year, they beat Wisconsin early in the season, but they still didn't have a especially great year. See if they can turn a win against Denver into a really good year. We'll talk some college hockey with Lindenwood hockey coach Keith Fisher. He is going to join us in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I'll tell you what, another year and another really special victory for Lindenwood hockey over the weekend, specifically on Friday night. They were matched up against Denver University, DU, and they come away with a victory 4-3 over the number 5 team in the nation. And to talk through that and talk about his program a little bit, we welcome onto the show Keith Fisher, the head coach of Lindenwood men's hockey. Coach, thank you for taking some time. How are you?
Things are good. I mean, you know, that was a big win on Friday for the program and for the guys in the locker room. And we've won three of our last four hockey games. So, you know, we're doing a lot of good things, but we're still building of where we need to get to.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because wins like this get people like me to give you a call, but it's also, from your perspective, it's just one game and it's just one win and there's a very long season in front of you. How do you kind of, you know, scale up those two things of knowing that it's an important win, but also knowing there's a lot of work right there coming up?
Well, yeah, and that, you know, like it was a big emotional win on Friday night, and I think it hurt us a little bit on Saturday, where we just didn't have the same juice that we had on Friday night. So, you know, that's something that we need to learn from. And I told the guys that we're going to play in bigger games than this in the future. So it's something that we need to learn from and learn how to, you know, everybody talks about mental toughness when things are going bad, when your back's against the wall and you need to be mentally tough. You know, you need to be mentally tough when things are going well too. When, you know what, you're down or you have a big win on Friday, you need to be mentally tough to come out and do the same thing and play your game on Saturday. So, still learning process for this team, but we've done a lot of good things here these first 3 weeks.
What did it say about your club that was a game where you got up, but then you got down, and then you got up again, and you were able to hold on? I mean, just the way that all played out, it certainly said something about your team.
Well, the resiliency with this group all year has been there. I mean, our first two wins weekend before up at Lake State, you know, on Saturday night, we're down 2-0 early on. And, you know, I think on Friday night, we're down 4-2 going in the third period. Now, not the way you want to write it up, but I give the group credit of, you know, believing in what we're doing and how we're playing and sticking with it and then, you know, getting success from it in the end. So, you know, now we just need to work on putting 60 minutes together.
DU scored that final goal for them with 54 seconds to go. What is that final minute or so like when your team is holding on to that one goal lead?
It's weird. Like, you got a lot of emotions going through your mind, but, you know, it's just make the next play, make the next play, make the next play. And, you know, and I hope we're in that situation a lot moving forward. And that's what I tell the group. So, we need to be comfortable in those situations, but, yeah, I mean, the last 2.5 minutes there, the heart was racing a little bit more.
I know you weren't there last year, but last year around this time, a win against number 9 Wisconsin. This year, a win against number 5 DU. What does it say about Lindenwood, just from a big picture standpoint, that every year the team is putting together these type of marquee victories?
Oh yeah, I mean that's what's special about college hockey is that you know, anybody can win on any night. You have to play your best, and winning in college hockey is very, very hard, night in and night out. So, but the good thing is it puts Lindenwood hockey on the map and shows that we can compete with these teams, and that's what we want to do in the future. And hopefully we're going to be in the league in the future with a lot of top programs. But, you know, having wins like we did on Friday, you know, show people that we're doing things the right way. We're really committed to hockey here, and we want to continue to make this program bigger and better.
We're talking with Keith Fisher, head coach at Lindenwood for the men's hockey program. You came from Penn State. You were voted as the top assistant coach of the year in all of college hockey. When the Lindenwood job came open, what was, I mean, you look at your resume and you say, maybe this is a guy who sits and waits for one of these major conference-type jobs to come open, but you make the jump to Lindenwood. What was it about this program that made you so interested in it?
Well, it's an opportunity to build another program. When I started at Penn State, even going back to my time at Princeton, it was kind of, you know, at Princeton, we were probably one of the worst teams in college hockey when Coach Godowski and I got there. And then we moved on to Penn State and built that program from a club program, you know, to the Big Ten. And, you know, I would consider it a top 10 program right now in the country. And but it's fun to be able to build a program. It's fun to put your stamp on things and do things that you can come back to in, you know, 15, 20 years and look, hey, look at, they're still doing this. You know, I helped start this. And, you know, when Lindenwood is hopefully a top, you know, 10, 15 program here in the future, you know, hopefully what I instilled here had a lot to do with it.
You mentioned eventually getting into to a league and being able to play those type of opponents more often. How just the current state, I mean, the athletics program is still so early on in terms of its D1. The hockey program hasn't been around that long. But I know you don't want to, like, dive in on the challenges, but there are certainly some challenges right now as this program does continue to build.
Yeah, I mean, I think our biggest challenge is just getting the awareness out. And that's why I'm pumped that you wanted me on your show tonight. But we need more people. We need more people supporting our student athletes. You know, they work extremely hard. And we have the number 5 team in the country here. And, you know, we need to get 2,000, 2,500. We should be selling some team out. And I think, just the awareness locally will help us, you know, on a national level as well. But, that's something that we're talking about as an athletic department, is just getting more awareness, you know, within the St. Charles, St. Peter community. Like, we're a real program. We got a ton of great teams coming in here. And I look at college hockey right now as, you know, a stepping stone for the NHL. A lot of the players that you see are going to be playing either for the Blues or against the Blues in, you know, 2-3 years.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Snuggerud is a great example of that. He was a college hockey player basically a year ago, and he's now a big part of the Blues. I was talking before we started, before I brought you on the air, we were talking off a little bit. I lived in Colorado Springs for a good number of years, and in Colorado Springs, you've got 2 college hockey programs in Colorado College and Air Force that are both really big deals in the community, and college hockey is so much fun. And I think in St. Louis, especially since Missouri and Illinois, those two universities don't really have college hockey at the highest level, this is an opportunity for Lindenwood to show the St. Louis market what college hockey is about. So I hope that people do get to kind of know what's going on at Lindenwood, because as you mentioned, that's a really good DU team that came in. And you've got other teams that are going to come in that are really high-level hockey, and it's something that hasn't really existed, not even in St. Louis, but close to St. Louis for a while.
Yeah, and we're the only Division I hockey program in the state of Missouri. And like you said, Mizzou doesn't have a big-time program or any other college hockey, and there is no college hockey in the state of Illinois. So we are the only college hockey program around. And, you know, our game Friday night against Denver, that was a high-quality college hockey game. And I've been fortunate to be a part of a lot of high-quality hockey games, being with my time of Penn State and the Big Ten. And that was one of them. That was comparable to one of them. It was fast. Plays were being made on both sides. It was an even hockey game. Shots were 33-33. Chances were even. That's a high-level hockey game. And, a facility like Centene, where you're close to the action, right on top of the guys, it's awesome to watch hockey there. Like, there's no better place to watch a big-time college hockey game. If you're into hockey, like, it's a big-time place to watch hockey.
From a recruiting standpoint, the fact that you are kind of on an island, is there an advantage in there that you've got the state of Missouri, you've got the state of Illinois right next to you? There's a, when you think about geographically, you probably got to, you know, go up to Wisconsin or go over to Denver to think about the teams that are closest to you geographically that has college hockey. Are you able to get into some places because of that?
I've been coaching, you know, college and junior hockey for the last 25 years. And I think I've always, probably 90% of the years, I've had somebody from St. Louis on our team. You know, even going back to Paul Stastny when he played for us, and Jan Stastny played for us with the Omaha Lancers when I was assistant then. So I think St. Louis is a hockey hotbed right now. And we want to keep all the top local talent that's here. I mean, there's a lot of big time players coming out of St. Louis right now, but then you got to expand your borders a little bit. And, you know, hopefully we can tap into the, Michigan area a little bit, maybe Chicago. I'm from Minnesota. I want to get some more Minnesota players down here. And then, with the opening of CHL, there is so many more players available that, I think it brings the level of play in college hockey up big time. So I think college hockey is just going to improve every year moving forward.
If you want to check out Lindenwood for yourself, they're going to be back at home this weekend, Friday and Saturday. They'll take on Miami of Ohio, 7:10 puck drop each night over at the Centene Community Ice Center in Maryland Heights. You can learn all about their schedule and who they are by heading to the website, LindenwoodLions.com. Coach, I really appreciate the time. Congratulations on the win, and hopefully we can chat again down the line.
Yeah, I'd love to do this anytime. Thanks for having me on.
That is Coach Keith Fisher. He is the head coach of the Lindenwood men's hockey team. Again, that's two things. Thing number one, from a program standpoint, it's really cool when you play at Lindenwood and you get to beat top 10 teams in the nation like they did last year with Wisconsin and like they did this year with Denver. From a personal standpoint, these are a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds who just created a memory that they'll have forever. Daniel Henkamp is here. Turn your mic on for a second because you do the broadcast, like the student broadcast for Lindenwood High. Am I saying that correctly?
It is, yeah, okay. On KCLC.
Okay, so what was that like for you? Because I talk about the 18 to 22-year-olds who are playing in that game and get to have a memory forever of knocking off the number 5 team in the nation. I know you texted me that night. You were pretty fired up. What was it like for you being able to broadcast that game of what was just an extraordinary moment for that program?
Well, we kind of almost had a big no-no because we were all just so speechless with what happened. It was so fun. And the atmosphere, even though there wasn't that many people at the Centene because Linda was still building that persona, if you will, in college hockey, it was awesome. And the guys had so much fun. You could just see all the excitement.
I need to get out and watch. I haven't gone. Now, Fridays are tough because I'm hosting this show, but I'll get the family together. We'll come out to a hockey game here on Saturday because I love college hockey and it's really easy for me to sit here and say, oh, I love college hockey because I used to go to college hockey games all the time when I lived in Colorado and then not follow that up by actually going to games here in St. Louis. So I'll put it on myself. I gotta go check out some Lindenwood hockey myself because that is it's a great story of what happened this weekend and hopefully Coach Fisher in his first year. And when I made that, I asked him that question about why Lindenwood. Again, he was at Penn State and he was voted the number one assistant coach in all of college hockey. That means at some point in time, if he would have waited, he probably gets a power conference job at some point. If you're at a power conference team and you've been named the top assistant coach in all of college hockey, even if it wasn't going to be going into this season, at some point in time, one of the big boys is probably going to come knocking on your door. And can that still happen for him? Sure. We saw Lindenwood have a coach leave this past year. But the fact that Coach Fisher made that decision to come to Lindenwood when he had all that going for him, it says something about him, but it also says something about the Lindenwood program. We'll take a break. We've still got a lot more coming up. We've got 20 minutes left in the program. Don't go anywhere. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Rolling on here on a Monday night. We've got you for another 15 minutes or so. We take you until 8 o'clock. Don't know if you saw the news today, but the saga involving Albert Pujols as a major league manager took a little bit of an interesting turn today. If you listen to this show every day, you remember it was one day last week. I don't remember what day it was, but it was one day last week where the reporting was that Albert Pujols was very close to being the next manager of the Los Angeles Angels. So much so, he had a meeting with the Angels folks here in St. Louis. They came here to visit with him. And the reporting had been that they were negotiating a contract. Well, now the reporting is he is no longer a candidate to be a member, to be the manager of the Los Angeles Angels. What's not known is if it was financials that got in the way, if it was maybe he looked at the Angels and said, I can do better than this. Because the Angels are not well run. Maybe, you know, he's being paid $1 million a year on that personal services contract. Perhaps the Angels kind of balked at him asking for a lot more money than $1 million a year. I don't know. All this is just me going off the cuff on the potential things that could have happened that would have resulted in the timeline of being at some point last week, whatever day it was that it came out, that Pujols was the leading candidate to be the manager of the Angels, and they were going into contract negotiations to today's news that he is no longer a candidate to be the manager of the Angels. So clearly something happened during that time. Whatever might have happened, I don't know. I am happy for Pujols that he is not going to be the manager of the Angels because it is such a poorly run organization. I want him to go somewhere where he can be successful, and I feel like there's better options. In fact, he has two other teams that are still interested in him. The Baltimore Orioles have reached out with interest. I think the Orioles are a better situation than the Angels, but they're not a situation that is an automatic winner. There is evidently some interest, but the ESPN report says an interview at this point has not been scheduled. One interview has been scheduled, though. He is set to interview for the job in San Diego. And would it be irony if he ended up with the Padres, where they would go from Mike Schilt to Albert Pujols? Like, do the Padres just want to hire people who are very popular in St. Louis? Is that what they're looking to do? I say that jokingly. I think if you've listened to me, you know I think that Pujols has the opportunity and checks all the boxes to be a really, really good major league manager. And here's something else. He has a good relationship already and is very much respected from a couple of their stars in Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. So I think that would help. So of all the managerial jobs that are open right now, you can make the argument that the Padres job is the best one. It's probably that one or the Atlanta Braves. I think if I'm looking at all the jobs that are open, Angels, Orioles, Braves, Giants, Nationals, Rockies, Twins, I would look at the Padres and I would look at the Braves as the teams that are most ready to win. And then I'd put the Giants kind of at like 1A or whatever it might be. They're right there after it. And then you would slot some other teams in after that. But I think it seems likely that Pujols is going to be a manager next year. The Padres did have to get permission from the Angels to be able to interview him, because he is still under that personal services contract. You would think that if the Padres end up hiring him, or if any other team hires him, that personal services contract would just be ripped up and it would never be put in place again. They would be done with that. But he is still an employee of the Angels, so that is something that has to be worked through as well. The other bit of managerial news, and this certainly has a St. Louis tint to it because of Tony Vitello and his connection to our community, current Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello. He reportedly is the leading candidate for the job with the San Francisco Giants. There has never been a college baseball coach that has gone straight from being a college coach to being a major league manager. And the jobs are very different. And Vitello's a guy that, and I love Tony Vitello. I love him. I love the way he coaches college baseball. He is fun. There's a reason that Tennessee program has done what it's done. He won a national title a couple years back. I mean, this is a guy who is really, really good as a college baseball coach. He's a wild man out there, that's for sure. He's probably have to tone things down a bit in the big leagues. I have to wonder, did Pat Murphy blaze this trail? And I realized that Pat Murphy didn't go from being a college baseball coach to being a major league manager. He went from college baseball coach to minor league manager to major league bench coach to major league manager. But Pat Murphy cut his teeth as a college baseball coach at Notre Dame and Arizona. Do teams start looking more at college baseball coaches because that skill set seemingly has worked? If Vitello gets that job in San Francisco, that's going to be a big test, and that could certainly open up doors for college baseball coaches moving forward. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are starting to wrap up this edition of the program. I don't know if you saw this. Just a crazy thing occurred yesterday in the NFL. The Denver Broncos beat the New York Giants. That's not the crazy thing. Here's the crazy thing. The Broncos score all 33 of their points in the fourth quarter yesterday. The Broncos' 33 fourth quarter points were the most in NFL history by any team that was shut out for the first three quarters. That has never happened. Their quarterback, Bo Nix, became the first player ever to run for two scores and throw for two touchdowns in a single fourth quarter. And the comeback snapped a streak where NFL teams had won 1,602 consecutive games when leading by 18 points or more in the final 6 minutes of a game. The Giants are not very good. The Giants are a little bit better after they made their quarterback change when they moved out Russell Wilson and moved to Jackson Dart. But that is something you are not going to see, a 33-32 win for Denver, and all 33 of their points were scored in the fourth quarter. That was absolute craziness yesterday in the NFL. That is just about going to do it for this edition of the program. Certainly appreciate being with us. We've got a full show every day but Thursday this week, so we'll be back with you tomorrow, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.